Okay, so for Siman Tzadi Beis, we're going to talk about Chanan. So we'll talk about Chaticha Nasas Nevela as it relates to food. We'll talk about the big difference between Basar V'Chalav and Shari Surim, the big Chiddush of Rabbeinu Ephraim. And we'll talk about Chanan in the context of Kalim. Now, we're going to break this up, Be'ezras Hashem, into something like 7 or 8 topics. First, we'll talk about the case of the basar that makes its way into a piping hot, boiling vat of milk. We'll talk about the reverse case of a little bit of chalav that makes its way into your pan of meatballs. We'll talk about the difference between shari serum and basar v'chalav. We'll talk about the kinds of foods that we say chanan for, the exceptions to chanan. We'll talk about chanan by kalim, the tshuvas Maram Rotenberg, the Mordechai. We'll talk about what happens if you use a pot of milchix, if you're cooking milchix underneath a pot of fleishix. We'll talk about what happens if a pot of fleishix was sitting on top of a pot of milchix. We'll talk about what happens if a tipa shel chalav hits the lid of a fleishix keli, or if you mixed up the lids of fleishix keli with milchix keli, you used a chicken soup pot cover to cover your cheese omelet. And then finally, we'll talk about what happens if you have a candle that's made out of chaylev? What happens if that candle drips onto your pot of cooking food? Okay. So in terms of the first case, if you have some basar, a piece of meat that makes its way into your boiling hot vat of boiling milk. So if you take a look in the Gemara in Chulin Daf Kuf Chesam and Aleph, Rav comes along and Rav tells us that when you have a piece of meat that makes its way into this boiling hot vat of milk, so that the meat, of course, is going to be treif. The question is, what about the milk? So Rav tells you the milk actually is kosher. So the Gemara says, well, how on earth could the milk be kosher? Isn't the chalav nevela? Now, what does that mean, isn't the chalav nevela? So Rashi explains what that means is the Gemara is asking that presumably what happens here is that when a piece of meat finds its way into your boiling hot vat of milk, what will happen is the meat will absorb a certain amount of milk. And so any milk absorbed by that meat, of course, is going to be treif. It's going to be treif milk. And so if that meat would subsequently release that treif milk into the rest of the vat, so you'd have a case of min bimino on your hands. And so that would mean that, according to Rashi, you would say min bimino is also b'mashahu, so all the milk in the vat would be treif. And according to Rabbeinu Tam, you would say that you'd have a case of min bimino, which is batel b'shishim, so you'd need 60 parts of milk in the rest of the vat in order to be mevatel that the treif chalav released by the meat. And so the Gemara says, why is it such a davar pashat to Rav? We know that Rav holds that min bimino is also b'mashahu, and if that's the case, according to Rav, as soon as the meat releases any amount of milk, so that milk being released by the meat is treif, and so that you'd have a case of min mino, and min mino would be also mashu, so the rest of the milk in the vat should be treif. So the meat should be treif, and the milk should be treif. Why does Rav say that the milk in the vat is going to be kosher? So the Gemara explains, well, actually, in order for meat to be able to release the tam of chalav, the treif tam of chalav that's sitting within it now, it's not going to release any treif chalav until the bubbling subsides, until this hot vat of milk settles down a little bit. So therefore, if you took out the piece of meat before the bubbling stopped, so then the meat is not actually going to release any treif tam of chalav. And therefore, the only thing that's treif over here is the piece of meat. The rest of the vat of milk is going to be kosher. That's Rav's Chiddush. Now, if I had to write this up as a halacha, so I would have said, so therefore, if you have a piece of meat that makes its way into a boiling hot vat of milk, I would say that as long as you take out the piece of meat before the bubbling subsides, the meat will be treif, but the milk will be kosher. However, if you take a look at the Torah in Siman Tzadi Beis, the Torah tells you that that's not the case. The Torah says that if you take out the piece of meat before the bubbling subsides, and you have 60 parts of milk against the piece of meat, so then the milk will be kosher. So the obvious question is, where did the Torah get this idea that you need 60 parts of heter against the piece of meat? Why would you need that? I thought we just got finished saying that as long as the basar was taken out before the bubbling stops, so the basar is not going to release any treif milk flavor into the rest of the vat. So the Beis Yosef explains that the Torah is really coming off the smag. The smag explains that, remember, the basar, while it is true that the basar can be releasing treif milk flavor that it absorbed in the course of boiling in this pot of vat of milk, but there's another thing that the basar can be releasing, and that is tam of basar. So while it is true that the Gemara that Rav is mechadish in the Gemara Kuf Ches and Chulin, that the basar is not going to release any of the milk that it absorbed until the bubbling subsides, But the basar will still release tam of basar, right? It doesn't have to wait for the tam, for the bubbling to subside in order to release tam of basar. And therefore, there's two things you're going to have to account for. You're going to have to account for the treif milk that would be potentially released by this meat if you leave the meat in there long enough for the bubbling to stop. But then you're also going to have to account for the tam of basar that can be released any time while the meat is boiling in this pot of, in this vat of boiling milk. And therefore, that's why even if you manage to take out the basar from this vat of milk before the bubbling stops, so that'll account for the treif challah that might have been released by the meat, but you'll still have to make sure that there's no tam of basar in the rest of the milk. And therefore, the Torah says that you're going to need 60 parts of heter, 60 parts of milk, against the piece of meat to account for that basar. And the Beis Yosef explains that this is not just the smag and the Torah. The Torah is also, this is also consistent with the Rambam and the Rashba. If you take a look at the Rambam in Perek Tes and Machalas Asuras, the Rambam writes in Halacha Ches over there, the Rambam discusses exactly this case, and the Rambam says when you have a piece of meat that makes its way into boiling hot vat of milk, you have to make sure to take the meat out before the bubbling stops. But even if you did that, the Rambam says that you have to have a guy test taste the pot of milk to make sure, the way that we would understand it, to make sure that there's no tam of basar in the rest of the milk. Why would you have to do that? Again, because it's this idea that you have to make sure that there's no, that while you have already accounted for the treif tam of chalav that could have been released by the meat into the rest of the vat of milk, but you're still going to have to account for the tam of basar that this piece of meat would be releasing throughout into the pot of milk. And so we know that this is, of course, a Rambam Lashitase. The Rambam holds that the way that you always account for Nesinas time is not by using Shishim, if you don't have to, is always by using Ti'imas Kvela. Okay, this is in terms of the piece of meat that makes its way into the pot of boiling milk. What about the reverse case? What about if I have a Tipah Shel Chalav, I'm making a pot of meatballs, and next to the pot of meatballs, I decide to pour myself a bowl of cereal and milk, and as I'm pouring the milk, some of the milk splatters and hits one of the meatballs in the pot. So what's the story? Do I need 60 parts of meat within that one meatball in order to be mevatel the Tipah Shel Chalav, or do I say that I have many, many meatballs within this pot, and so all the meat can join together to be mevatel the tam of chalav that's contained within this meatball? So this is a Mishnah in Chulin, also earlier on the Gemara in Kuf Ches and Aleph, at the very beginning of Kuf Ches in Chulin. The Mishnah says it depends. If you stirred up the pot of meatballs as soon as the tipah shel chalav fell into your pot and hit one of your meatballs, so then the milk, the tipah shel chalav, would be dispersed throughout all the meat, and therefore the rest of the basar in the pot will be mevatel the tipah shel chalav. However, if you didn't stir up the pot when the Tipah Shel Chalav made its way in, so then that one meatball hit will become treif unless it has 60 parts of basar against the Tipah Shel Chalav. Now we know from the Hemshech of the Gemara that we've discussed in the past is that meatball, once the meatball itself is treif, it can treif up all the other meatballs in the pot. We'll discuss how that happens exactly, but if you say min mimino is osir, either ramash or rishishim, so you need 60 parts of heter against the entire meatball, or you would say that the whole pot becomes treif if you hold like Rashi, depending if you hold like Rashi, like the Beinu Tam. Now, in terms of this Tipah Shel Chalav being dispersed throughout the rest of the meat in the pot, in order for the rest of the meat to join together to be mevatel the Tipah Shel Chalav. So there are three ways for this Tipah Shel Chalav to be dispersed throughout the pot. The first is the one that we just mentioned in the Mishnah, that if you stir up the pot as soon as the Tipah Shel Chalav makes its way in, so then the Tipah Shel Chalav is dispersed throughout the pot, and therefore I can use all the parts of all the meat in the pot will comprise the 60 parts of heter to be mevatel the Tipah Shel Chalav to allow this pot to be kosher. But there's two other ways for this Tipah Shel Chalav to be dispersed throughout. The second way is mentioned in the Gemara, and that is if you cover the pot. If you cover the pot when the Tipah Shel Chalav made its way in, then that's another way of facilitating the transfer of tam, the dispersal of this tam, into the rest of the pot of meatballs. And therefore, if I cover the pot as soon as the Tipah Shel Chalav made its way in, so then that'll allow the rest of the meat in the pot to join together to be mevatel the Tipah Shel Chalav. Now, there's the third way for this Tipah Shel Chalav to be dispersed throughout is actually machlokes rishonim. The Balei HaTosfos say that if when this Tipah Shel Chalav hits the meatball is sitting in a little bit of liquid, so the liquid facilitates the transfer of that Tipah Shel Chalav into the rest of the pot. And therefore, if this meatball is sitting in liquid, when the tipu shachalav hits this meatball, that'll allow the tipu shachalav to be dispersed throughout the rest of the meat. And if I have 60 parts of hat, there's 60 parts of meat against the tipu shachalav, then the meatball itself won't be treif, and the whole pot won't be treif. However, Rashi disagrees with this. The Beis Yosef tries to figure out exactly where it's Meduyuk and Rashi that he holds this way. But Rashi disagrees with the Balei Tosfos, and Rashi understands that even if the meatball is sitting in a little bit of liquid, if the tipu shachalav hits that meatball, it doesn't make a difference if the meatball is sitting in a little bit of liquid. The meatball itself will become treif unless the meatball itself has 60 parts of meat against the tipu shachalav. So that is the three ways for tipa shel chalav, for chalav to be dispersed throughout the pot. The first one is mentioned in the Mishnah, that by stirring the pot, that'll disperse the tipa shel chalav into the rest of the pot. The second way is by covering the pot as soon as the tipa shel chalav makes its way in. And the third is by according to the Balei Tosfos, if you have the meatball sitting in a pot of milk. Now, the Rambam Shita is a little bit complicated. If you take a look at the Rambam in Machalas Asuris, in Perek Tes, the Rambam discusses this case in a Halacha Tes and a Halacha Yod, and the Rambam says, if you have a droplet of milk that made its way into your pot containing meat, so you have to taste that piece that the milk fell into, and you have to taste it to make sure that there's no time of chalav. If it has no time of chalav, then everything is going to be kosher. If there is a time of chalav into that piece, so then it'll become treif, and it could ultimately result in the rest of the pieces becoming treif as well. Now, in Halacha Yud, the Rambam says something that's a little bit, that the Rishonim understand to be a little bit ambiguous, where we have a little bit of machlokes between the Beis Yosef, the Tor, versus Rav Yaakov Ibn Chabib. In Halacha Yud, the Rambam writes, "Bamed devar mamurim, b'shalon nir es hakadeira, b'tchila, if you didn't stir the pot as soon as the tipu shachalav made its way in. Kishanafal achalav, elul abasof, you stir the pot at the very end, velo kisa." So the Rambam says that if you didn't stir, when do we say this, what we said in Halacha Test, that if you have a tipu shachalav that made its way into the basar, it's going to treif up that meat if the meatball itself has a tam shachalav? That's only if you didn't stir the pot when the tipu shachalav made its way in, or if you didn't cover the pot. However, says the Rambam, avalim nir mitchila v'atzof, if you did stir the pot from beginning to end, o shekisim yishas nefila atzof, or if you cover the pot from beginning to end, harei zeh binosin tam. So then, you would need in order for the whole pot of meatballs to become treif, you would have to have had the anasinas tam in the entire pot of meatballs. So the big question that the Rishonim want to know is, when the Rambam says that you have to have stirred it from beginning to end, does it really mean that you have to have stirred it from beginning to end? Or does it mean that you need to stir the pot as soon as the tipu shachalav makes its way in? If you stir the pot as soon as the tipu shachalav makes its way in, then you can make sure then that the tipu shachalav has been dispersed throughout. And if it's been dispersed throughout, so then you would have all the 60 parts of all the rest of the meat in the pot and joined together to comprise 60 parts of hetzer to be mevatel the tam shachalav. Now, why did the Rambam say you need to stir from beginning to end? So then I would say that's because you just have to stir it really, really well. So that's the machlokas between the Beis Yosef and between the Rav Yaakov Ibn Chabib. According to the Beis Yosef, the Beis Yosef reads the Rambam kipshuto, that the Rambam means that you do in fact have to stir the pot from beginning to end in order for the tipu shachalav to be dispersed throughout. You do in fact have to cover the pot from beginning to end in order for the tipu shachalav to be dispersed throughout the meat, in order for the rest of the meat, all the meat in the pot to join together to comprise 60 parts to be mevatel the tipu shachalav. However, Rav Yaakov Ibn Chabib doesn't. Now the Beis Yosef, he learns up the Gemara. He says that the Rambam is getting it from Gemara Kuf Chesam and Beis, where it does discuss such an idea when we're explaining machlokas between Rabbi Yudah and the Chacham and the Braisa. However, Rav Yaakov Ibn Chabib disagrees. The Rav Yaakov Ibn Chabib lav dafkas that line of the Rambam. He says that what the Rambam just means is that when the tipu shachalav makes its way, you have to make sure that you mix up the pot really well. As soon as the tipu shachalav hits, you have to make sure that you cover the pot really well as soon as the tipu shachalav hits, in order to disperse the tam of chalav into the rest of the pot. Now, that's in terms of dispersing the tam of chalav into the rest of the pot. Now, the question becomes, that we know that the halacha is that as soon as the tipa shechalav hits this meatball, the meatball becomes treif if it doesn't have 60 parts of heter against the tipa shechalav. Right? That's the Mishnah Kuf Ches. And now the question is, what about the rest of the meatball? So we say that that's a case of min b'mino. If it's a case of min b'mino, so all the other meatballs in the pot can potentially become treif. If you learn like the Rabbeinu Tam, then you need 60 parts of heter against the entire treif meatball in order for the other meatballs to not become treif. Bitaris min b'mino. And if you learn like Rashi, you would say min b'mino is oser b'mashu, so all the other meatballs would become treif. The question is, how exactly does this treif meatball treif up all the other meatballs in the pot? How does that happen? How do we get the tam from that, from the shared nesinas tam from that meatball? How do we get the tam from that meatball into the other meatballs in order to treif them up? Do you have to stir up the pot? If the meatball is sitting in liquid, does that make a difference? So in particular, the question is within Shitas Rashi. We know that Rashi holds that if I have a meatball that's sitting in the liquid and a tipa shel chalav hits that meatball, then that meatball can become treif, and the milk is not considered to be transferred throughout. In other words, even though the meatball is sitting within liquid, the liquid does not facilitate the transfer of that tipa shel chalav into the rest of the pot, in order for the rest of the meatballs in the pot to contribute to the heter to mivatel the tipa shel chalav. So the question is, would Rashi hold that way as well when it comes to a treif meatball? In other words, if I have a treif meatball that's sitting in a little bit of liquid and a little bit of sauce, would I say that now that the meatball is treif, that the liquid does not facilitate the transfer of that tam shel iser into the rest of the meatballs as well? That's the question. The Ran understands Rashi very mechadish, and the Ran understands that even though Rashi holds that liquid does not facilitate the transfer of tipa shel chalav into the rest of the meatballs, but it does facilitate the transfer of tam shel iser into the rest of the meatballs. And therefore, the Ran understands that Rashi will tell you, as long as this meatball, this treif meatball, is sitting in liquid, that treif meatball affects all the other meatballs in the pot, and it could potentially make all the other meatballs in the pot usher. That's the Ran sheet that Agos Maimonides also learns it that way. However, the other Rishonim, the Rambam, the Ravid, the Mordechai, the Agos Maimonides himself. I'm sorry, it wasn't the Ran and the Agos Maimonides. It was the Ran and the Magad Mishnah. However, the other Rishonim, the Ravid, the Rajba, the Rambam, at least as understood by the Magad Mishnah, Agos Maimonides, the Mordechai, they all learn that in order for this meatball to affect the other meatballs in the pot, to treif them up, you actually would have had to stir up this pot in order for the meatball shel iser to treif up all the other meatballs in the pot. So the question becomes, though, why is that? If I have a meatball that contains tam shel chalav in it, and now I disperse this meatball, I stir up this pot, and this iser permeates, the tam shel chalav has now permeated, presumably it's permeated the rest of the pot as well. So why is it exactly that I don't say that once this tam shel chalav has been dispersed throughout, why didn't I say that the meatball is no longer treif? Why would I say that this meatball is considered to be a piece of iser itself, such that it'll treif up all the other meatballs in the pot? This is really a machlokes emaraim. This is the discussion of esher l'sochto aser, esher l'sochto mutter. The Gemara in Kuf Ches later on presents a machlokes emaraim between Rav and Rav Yochanan on the one hand, along with Rav Chanina, versus Shmuel, Rav Shlakish, Rav Shimon bar Rebbe, that whether you say esher l'sochto aser, esher l'sochto mutter. According to Rav and Rav Yochanan, they understand that esher l'sochto is aser, and therefore, even though yes, it is true that the tam shel chalav, or the tam shel iser in this case, is purged, the meatball is purged of that tam, and therefore the tam is spread throughout, it doesn't make a difference. Once this meatball has become treif, it is the iser has left its mark on that meatball, and the meatball becomes a chaticha shel nevela. However, the Rish Lakish and Shmuel, they understand not like that. They understand efshel soch the mutter, and therefore if the meatball has been purged of this tam shel iser, of the at least in this case it would be the tam shel chalav, if it's been purged of that iser, then it's not left as a chatich shel nevela, it's not less left as a piece of iser, and therefore it will become mutter. That's the machlokes. Now, how do we paskin? The Rambam, the Rashba, and others, all paskin efshel sochto is aser, and therefore once this meatball becomes aser because it received a tam shel chalav, that meatball itself will always retain its status as iser, and it will aser anything else that it finds itself together with. The question is, though, we know that there's a machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chacham if you say min v'mino batal and min v'mino lo batal. We know that according to Rabbi Yehuda, he says min v'mino is batal. I'm sorry, excuse me. That according to Rabbi Yehuda, he says min v'mino is lo batal, and according to the Chacham, they say min v'mino lo batal. I said it exactly in reverse again. I apologize. According to Rabbi Yehuda, min b'mino is lo batal. And according to the Chacham, min b'mino is batal. The question is, if I have a little bit more of a lenient stance in the context of min b'mino, that I say min b'mino batal, according to the Chachamim, what will they hold when it comes to Efshel Sokhto? Will the Chacham say, are they going to buy into the concept of Efshel Sokhto Aser? Are they going to hold that way? That if they're making when it comes to Min B'mino in general, and they say Min B'mino is batal, will they say Efshel Sokhto Aser? Will they say that this Chaticha, once it is absorbed, time of Isser, once it's absorbed, the meatball is absorbed, time of Chalav, it becomes Treif, and therefore even if I purge the meatball of its time, it still retains its Isser or not. So, the Ran quotes a Yesh Aymrim, that there is a Yesh Aymrim that explains the Rif that way, that the Rif paskins like the Chachamim, that the Rif paskins like the Chachamim, that Min B'mino is Batal, and therefore, because the Rif paskins that way, the Rif also holds that they don't buy into the idea of Efshel Sokhto Aser, and therefore they would be Meku when it comes to Efshel Sokhto. That's how some explain the Rif. The Ran disagrees with that understanding in the Rif. Others disagree with that whole notion. The Ramban, the Magen Mishnah, they all understand that they're not interconnected. They're not mutually exclusive. Just because you hold min b'mino batal does not mean that you're not going to buy into the idea of Efshel Sokhto Aser. It's very possible to hold min b'mino is batal and still hold Efshel Sokhto Aser. And that's how we seem to paskin. That's what the Beis Yosef presents from the Ramban, from the Ravid, from the Ran, that they all hold that way, that even though we hold Min B'mino as Batal, it's still possible to say Efshel Sokhto is Asher. Okay, now, so far, we've discussed Efshel Sokhto Asher, Chaticha Nasus Nevela in the context of Bashar V'Chalav. What about in the context of Shari Surah? So this leads us to the Gemara in Daf Kuf Amud Aleph in Chulin. Rav comes along in the Gemara and Daf Kuf Amud Aleph, and he says the following. He says, let's say I have a meatball, I have a kosher meatball, I'm making meatballs, and I throw one meatball into the pot so far. And it's a kosher meatball. And then, afterwards, I roll a meatball that's a nevela meatball. It's a non-kosher meat, for whatever reason. It's nevela meatball. And I throw that into the pot. And then I realize, I've got a nevela meatball in my pot. So I quickly take out the meatball and I quickly take out all the liquid, and I continue rolling, making kosher meatballs into this pot. What's the din? So Rav says, if that first meatball that was in the pot together with the nevela meatball received in sheer nesinas tam from the nevela meatball, then this meatball, this once upon a time kosher meatball, will trafe up all the other meatballs in the pot. Again, in our case, I'm rolling out a kosher meatball in my pot, and so I put in a kosher meatball. Then I put in a non-kosher meatball, a nevela meatball. I realize, I've got a nevela meatball in here, so I take out the nevela meatball, I take out all the sauce, and now I continue rolling kosher meatballs into the pot. So the halacha is that if that very first meatball received a sheer nesinas tam from the nevela meatball, it will trafe up all the other meatballs as well. That's Rav's Chiddush. So come the Balei Tosfos and they say, I don't understand. If Rav holds, and we know that this is how Rav holds min b'mino, is also b'mashuhu, so then why should that original meatball have to have received a sheer nesinas tam? That seems inaccurate. According to Rav, all the meatball would have to receive is a mashuhu of tam in order to become treif. So the Rain of Time explains, yeah, that's true. And there's a difference, though, between the meatball itself becoming treif and that meatball having the ability to treif up other meatballs. In order for that first meatball, the first kosher meatball, to become treif when it's cooked together with the nevela meatball, all it needs is a sheer mashu in order for that meatball to become treif. However, if that meatball is then to go ahead and treif up a whole bunch of other meatballs, the meatball had to have received a sheer nesinas tam from the nevela meatball. Now, why is that? Why would you say such a thing? Rabbeinu Ephraim explains that's because, yes, it's true that min b'mino is osur b'mashu, and so in order for a meatball to become osur, all it has to do is receive a sheer mashuhu. But in order for it to affect other meatballs in the pot, in order for that meatball to in turn trafe up other meatballs, we need a sheer nesinas tam. Why? Because if there's a sheer nesinas tam, so then we say that that iser is as though it's be'en. And if it's be'en, then it can affect other meatballs in the pot. However, if the iser is not be'en, because because the meatball did not receive, the kosher meatball did not receive a shir nesinas tam from the nevela meatball, so then the isra is not banned. And if the isra is not banned, then it's not going to be able to affect the other meatballs in the pot. That's what the Rebbeinu Ephraim is masber. This idea. So again, in order for the meatball itself, for the kosher meatball to become treif, all it has to do is it has to receive a sheer mashu from the nevela meatball. But in order for this kosher meatball to become treif, such that it can then turn around and treif up a whole bunch of other meatballs, it had to have received a sheer nesinas tam from the nevela meatball. Now, the Rebbeinu Ephraim comes along and he says, though, that there's a very big difference between the Gemara in Kof Ches, when we're talking about a meatball that became treif b'toras bas v'chalav, versus the Gemara in Daf Kuf, where we're discussing a meatball that became treif because it received shir nesinas tam from nevela. And that is, that in the Gemara in Daf Kuf Ches and Aleph, where we're talking about the bas v'chalav meatball, that meatball is going to require 60 parts of heter, at least according to Rebbeinu Ephraim, it's going to require 60 parts of heter against the entire meatball itself. Because the entire meatball itself is a chaticha shel nevela. However, when we're dealing with the meatball and daf kuf, where the meatball is cooked together with a nevela meatball, so that meatball itself doesn't become a full unit of chaticha shel nevela, it doesn't become all that it, we don't say that all the molecules in that kosher meatball are now treif and the chaticha shel nevela. We say that this is a kosher meatball that contains belios of iser. And therefore, I wouldn't need 60 parts of heter against the entire meatball. I would need 60 parts of heter against the belios of iser within this meatball in order to be mevakalat. So this is the Rebbeinu Ephraim's big chiluk between Chanan in the world of Basar V'Chalav and Chanan in the world of Shari Yisroel. The Chanan only applies to Basar V'Chalav. We only say that the meatball itself becomes a chaticha shel nevela if it's absorbed, if the meatball contains tam shel chalav, if it's asr b'toras Basar V'Chalav. If the meatball itself is asr, not b'toras Basar V'Chalav, but b'toras nevela, then it's not going to treif everything up such that you need 60 parts of etzer against the entire meatball. I would only need keneged the isr that's belua inside of it. The Rebbeinu Tam disagrees with this. The Rebbeinu Tam says that that's not true. We say Chanan by Basar V'Chalav, and we say Chanan when it comes to Shari Yisroel as well. And the Torah quotes both of these opinions. The Torah quotes both the Rebbeinu Ephraim and the Rebbeinu Tam's opinion. Now, how do we paskin? So if you take a look, the Rush is not so clear how he paskins. However, the Torah understood the Rush to paskin like the Rebbeinu Ephraim. And that's how the Torah himself seems to be known to. However, the Rambam also paskins that way. He paskins like the Rebbeinu Ephraim that the only time that you say Basar V'Chalav, the only way that you say Chanan is in the world of Basar V'Chalav. You wouldn't say it by Shari Yisroel. Similarly, the Beis Yosef, once you have the Rambam and the Rosh paskin like Rebbeinu Ephraim, the Beis Yosef also paskins that way. However, the Darkei Moshe quotes a whole slew of Rishonim who paskin like Rebbeinu Tam. That the Darkei Moshe quotes from the Ran, the Mordechai, the Gos Maimonides, B'Shem, the Smag, the Sveheter, the Ogre, they all paskin like Rebbeinu Tam, and therefore the Darkei Moshe paskins like Rebbeinu Tam. So this is the big machlokes between the Beis Yosef and the Darkei Moshe, between the Mechaber and the Ramah. If we paskin that Chanan, Chaticha Nasas Nevela, applies only by Basar V'Chalav or by Shari Yisroel as well. According to the Beis Yosef, we paskin like Rebbeinu Ephraim, that Chanan applies only by Basar V'Chalav, not by Shari Yisroel. And according to the Ramah, we paskin like the Rebbeinu Tam, the Chanan applies by both Basar V'Chalav and by Shari Yisroel. Now, the question that becomes, though, is that, okay, so let's say I say the Chanan applies by Basar V'Chalav according to Rebbeinu Ephraim, and I say the Chanan applies to Shari Yisroel according to the Rebbeinu Tam. The question is, though, does it make a difference on the kind of food or the way that the food was cooked? So there are three major svaras in terms of how Chanan affects the kinds of foods that Chanan affects. We have the shita of the Mordechai together with the Rashba and the Ravid, at least as understood by the Beis Yosef. It's not so pashut. Rabbi Eger does not necessarily understand that the Rashba and the Mordechai agree. But we have three major schools of thought in terms of how Chanan operates, what the Yisoid Hadavar of Chanan is. The first is based on the Mordechai, the Ravid, the Rashba, that they all hold that the idea behind Chanan is that a chaticha shel nevela is a piece of nevela. And therefore, when I say Chanan should apply to something, it's going to apply where the Isser basically takes over Heter and converts it to Isser, but where that chaticha shel Heter is now a separate and distinct piece of Isser. And therefore, the only way for Chanan to apply is, let's say, in a case of where I have a chaticha shel Heter that is belua me Isser. If I have a chaticha shel Heter, just like the meatball, it's belua me Isser, It's Belua, and therefore it becomes a separate, distinct entity of Isser. So that's where Hanan would apply. But let's say I have a case of Lach Belach. I have some milk that made its way into a chicken soup pot. Is that whole chicken soup pot going to become treif? It's going to become a chaticha shal nevel, and therefore if this falls into something else, I'm going to need 60 parts of heter against the entire chicken soup pot? She says, the Rashba says, the Mordechai, absolutely not, because Hanan applies only if the Isser, the Heter that was converted into Isser because it absorbed Isser, that's going to be only if the Isser is separate and distinct. That's the first Mahalach. The second Mahalach is a Yesham quoted by the Ran, and that is that the only time that you say Hanan is if the Isser is able to convert every ounce of Heter into Isser. In other words, it's able to permeate every ounce of Heter. And therefore, the way that that's going to happen is if a case, let's say, a case of lach balach. That if I have been, if I have a lach, if I have isser that's lach, and a hefter that's lach, so that's able to convert, the isser permeates every ounce of heter, and therefore that converts every ounce of heter into isser, and that would be the yisoda davra of chaticha shanavel. And similarly, you would say the same thing. If I have a chaticha that's blue on my isser, if the isser is able to permeate the entire piece of heter, that would be chaticha shal nevelim. That's the second school of thought. The third is the Ran. The Ran comes along and he says, Chaticha shal nevela in the world of Basar v'chalav is a din deraisa. Chaticha shal nevela, chaticha nases nevela in the world of Shar Yisurim is a din derabanan at best. And therefore, the way that Hanan is modeled is going to be it's modeled after Basar v'chalav. And so the same way the Basar v'chalav is going to be a problem of Hanan only when the Isser, only when the milk and meat are cooked together, so too Hanan by Shar Yisurim, the only way that Hanan is going to affect Shar Yisurim is if the Isser and Heter are cooked together. If they weren't cooked together, then Hanan is not going to apply. So for example, if I have Meduma, or if I have a case of Lach Balach where it was cold, then Hanan is not going to apply. Where if the Isser and Heter were cold when they were mixed together, Hanan is not going to apply. It's only going to apply if it was cooked together. Those are the three major shitas. Now, there is an exception to Hanan that Agos Hashri mentions, and that is Hanan wouldn't apply, let's say, by Basar Behema. Hanan applies, again, the whole idea is that it applies in the world of Basar V'chalav, but when it applies in the world of Basar V'chalav, that's only if we're dealing with something that's also on the Daraisa level, like Basar Behema. But if we're dealing with Basar Chai or with chicken, then Hanan is not going to apply. Okay, now there is a Mordechai that talks about Hanan in the context of Kalim, but we'll talk about that, I guess, within the general context of the Hemshech of Tiba Shechol that hits a pot that in order for Hanan to apply by Kalim. Okay, so far, just to summarize quickly, we've discussed the case of a piece of meat that makes its way into boiling hot vat of milk. Rav's Chiddush in the Gemara, the difference between the meat and the milk, that the milk can potentially be kosher as long as you take out the meat before the boiling stops, as long as you make sure also that there's no nesinus tam of basar, in the rest of the pot as well, from the Rambam, from the Smag. We talked about the reverse case of tipa shechalav that makes its way into your pot of meatballs. We talked about the difference between Hanan in the world of basar v'chalav and Hanan by Shari Surim. We talked about dispersing the tam of chalav into the rest of the pot of meatballs. How did that happen? Three different ways of dispersing the tam. The sheet of the Balei HaTosfos that Reitav can facilitate the transfer of tam. The question of whether Rashi holds that the isser can permeate the rest of the pot if the meatball is sitting in Reitav, or if you have to stir the pot up. Most of the Rishonim seems to say that you have to stir the pot up. The sheet of the Rambam that we talked about. Okay. Now, let's discuss Hanan in the world in the context of Kalim. There is a case that we discussed. Let's say you're cooking a pot of meatballs. And next to your pot of meatballs, you're pouring a bowl of cereal. And as you're pouring the bowl of cereal and milk, some of the milk splatters out and hits, not doesn't fall into the pot, but hits the side of the pot, hits the wall of the pot. So what would be the story? So this is a little bit of a machlokes rishonim. The Mordechai quotes a number of different tshuvas. The Mordechai quotes the tshuvas HaRavan, the tshuva from Rabbeinu Shimshon, his Rebbe the Maran Rutenberg. It boils down to a Gemara in Zvachim Daf Tzadi Vav Amud Beis. The Gemara in Zvachim Daf Tzadi Vav Amud Beis is discussing Mariko Shtifa. A number of the Daf are discussing Mariko Shtifa. It starts a Daf or two earlier. The halach is that for a carbon chatas, and who would then for other kachim? It's a question of the Gemara, if we say this by kachim kalim as well. But either way, when I boil up, if I cook up the meat of chatas, in order for, let's say, the kachim to be able to eat it, whatever it is, so if I boil it up in the pot, so what do I do with the pot afterwards? It has tam, let's say, of chatas meat in it. So the pasuk tells you in Vayikra, the pasuk tells you that you have to do Mariko Shtifa Nechad. The pasuk in Vayikra, it's a pasuk in Parshas Tzav. The pasuk in Vayikra Vav Chav Aleph says, "Ukli cheres asher tivusha bo yishaver v'im bichli nechoshes bushala umorak v'shutaf b'mayim." That if you cooked up the chatas meat in a copper kli, then you would have to do Mariko Shtifa. It's a machlokes in the Gemara exactly what Mariko Shtifa are. If it's Hagala, if Marika is some sort of a Hagala and Shtifa is rinsing out with cold water, or if both Marika and Shtifa are rinsing out with cold water, but either way, you have to rinse out the pot, you have to clean out this pot. Let's assume Marika is some sort of a Hagala and Shtifa is rinsing out with some sort of cold water. But either way, the Gemara asks the following question. The Gemara asks, what about if I don't use the full capacity of this metal kli in order to cook up the chatas meat? Let's say I only use a portion of this kli. I don't have so much meat that I'm cooking in this pot. I'm only cooking up a little bit. I'm cooking up a little bit of meat in this great big pot. So do I have to do Mariko Shtifa on the entire pot? And the Gemara gives two major suggestions as to why I would need to do Mariko Shtifa on the entire pot. The first idea suggested in the Gemara is that the concept of Bishul Mefapeya. That Bishul, when I'm cooking up this basar, this chatas meat in this pot, so Bishul facilitates the transfer, the ability for the chatas meat to permeate the entire kli. That's one possibility. And therefore, I would have to do Mariko Shtifa on the entire kli. However, the Gemara goes on a little bit and ultimately brings a pasuk, and actually brings this pasuk in Tzav, and says, if you take a look at the pasuk says, it sounds like the pasuk is saying, it doesn't make a difference how much meat you're cooking in this pot. If you're cooking any amount of meat in this pot, even if it's not making use of the entire capacity of this pot, you have to do Mariko Shtifa, and it sounds like you have to do Mariko Shtifa, it says Bederach Stimus, so you have to do Mariko Shtifa on the entire pot. So if that's the case, it seems that there's a chiddush within the world of kachim that you have to do Mariko Shtifa on this pot, even if you will use the pot for only a portion of this kli. Now, the Mordechai quotes a number of tshuvas. The first tshuva that he quotes is from the Ravan. The Ravan kind of says, let's ignore the Gemara Tzvachim for a moment. And the Ravan says that if I have our case of meatballs, I'm cooking a pot of meatballs, and some milk splatters on the side of the pot. So the Ravan says, very simple. Take a look at the Gemara in Kufches and Chulin. The Gemara in Kufches says, if I have a drop of milk that hits a pot of meat, that hits a piece of meat, so then it just depends if there's 60 parts of meat against the droplet of milk. If I have 60 parts of meat against the droplet of milk, then everything is fine. So similarly over here, as long as the pot has 60 parts against the pot itself, the walls of the pot, have 60 parts against the droplet of milk, or the amount of milk that hit the pot, then I'm fine. That's what the Ravan says. However, the Rebbeinu Shemsh and the Rambam Rothenberg understand from the Gemara in Zvachim, not like that. That the Gemara in Zvachim is telling you that there's a chiddush in the world of Kachim. In the world of Kachim, the Pasuk has to tell you that even though you used only a portion of this pot in order to cook up the tamav, in order to cook up the schatas, still you need Mariko Shtifa on the entire pot, even though, presumably, the tam shalchalav, the tam of basar, did not necessarily permeate the entire rest of the pot. And therefore, if I'm dealing with Shari Surim, if I'm dealing with any other case outside of the world of Kachim, I would say that the Tam does not, if I only use a region of this, only a portion of this pot to cook, then that does not mean that the Tam permeated the entire pot as well. And therefore, in our case of a Tipa Shechalav, if I'm cooking a pot of meatballs and some of the milk splatters on the outside part of the pot, I don't have to assume that the Tipa Shechalav permeated the entire pot. I assume that the Tipa Shechalav affected one local area of that pot. And if it affected only one local area of the pot, I just need 60 parts of Heter against the region that the Tipa Shechalav affected. And therefore, the way that the Maram Rutenberg says it, the way that the Torah quotes it, is that we need Shishim Pa'amim Shishim. That I would assume that the amount that the Tipa Shechalav can affect of this pot is 60 parts. So therefore, I would need, how much tafsil in the pot would I need in order to counter the region of the pot affected? I would need 60 parts, that 60-part area that the Tipa Shechalav affected. That's how the Maran Rothenberg understands. So far we've discussed the Ravan, who says, as long as you have 60 parts of the walls of the Kli against the Tipa Shechalav, you're fine. We have the Shita of the Maran Rothenberg, that if I have 60 parts of tafsil against the region of the pot affected by the Tipa Shechalav, then I'm fine. The third shita that we find is the shita of the smag. The Smar tells us that no, you kind of messed up the Gemara in Zvachim. The Gemara in Zvachim says, if you remember, the first part of the Gemara says, why would I need to do Mariko Shtif on the entire pot? I would have to do Mariko Shtif on the entire pot, even though I only cooked up a little bit of Chattas in this great big pot. So I still need to do Mariko Shtif on the whole thing. Why? Because Bishol Mithapeya. In other words, Bishol enables, affects that this tipa, that the tam of basar cooking in this pot permeates the entire pot, and therefore I have to assume that every ounce of this pot contains that tam of basar. And so similarly, when I have a tipa shel chalav that hits the outside part of this pot, I have to assume that this tipa shel chalav has now permeated and affected the entire pot. And therefore, if that's the case, then I have an entire pot that's containing basar and chalav, which means that the entire pot is treif, and if the entire pot is treif, then the contents, the meatballs contained in this pot are also going to be treif. That's the shita of this mag. So we have the shita of the Ravan, who says as long as the pot has 60 parts against the tipa shel chalav, you're fine. We have the shita of the Maram of Rutenberg that says as long as the tavshil has 60 parts against the region affected by the tipa shel chalav, you're fine. Then we have the smag, who the tour seems to hold like, who says that if the tipa shel chalav hit the side of the pot, it has affected the entire pot, and therefore the whole pot is treif. And if the whole pot is treif, then all the contents of the pot are treif. Now, the basis of understands that the Maram Rodenberg is cholik on the smag in that he has a manashach. He says manashach like this. If the tipa shel chalav has in fact permeated the entire pot, then why wouldn't you say that all the lachluchis, all the liquid, all the moisture contained within this pot should be mevata, the little bit of tipa shel chalav that hit the pot? And if you tell me that the tipa shel chalav didn't affect the entire pot, didn't permeate the entire pot, so then, it's only affected one little region of the pot. And if it's affected only a little region of the pot, then the tavshil that's contained within the pot should be able to be mevatel, the region of the pot that's affected. Okay, so that's the Ravan, the Maram Rutenberg, and the Smak. But then we have the Shita of the Smak. And the Smak says, it's not so simple. The Smak says, it depends where the milk splattered on this pot of meatballs. If the milk splattered on the lower end of this pot, where the meatballs, corresponding to the area where the meatballs are currently cooking, then that's no different than a tipa shel chalav that falls into the meatballs itself. And therefore, as long as I have 60 parts of meatballs against a little bit of milk that hit, then I'm fine. However, if the tipa shel chalav splattered above the area in the pot where the meatballs are cooking, further up in the pot, against the hollow area in the pot, so the empty area of the pot, so then I have to assume that the tipa shel chalav affected that entire region up until the area where the food is cooking, and therefore that entire part of the pot is going to be treif. That's what the smak says. Now, in light of that, therefore, the smak says, what are you supposed to do? You have half the pot that's treif, and the lower end of the pot where the meatballs, are cooking, is perfectly kosher. The meatballs themselves are kosher. But if that's the case, how do you get the meatballs out of the pot? So the smak gives you two etzes. One of them is mentioned in the Torah, the other one is not mentioned. But the smak gives you two etzes. The first thing that you could do is very simple. Make a hole in the bottom of the pot. If you drill a hole in the bottom of the pot, you can let out all the meatballs into the bottom of the pot. However, the smak doesn't, the Beis Yosef says that the reason that the Torah doesn't mention this reason is very simple, because we're nervous that in the course of making a hole in the bottom of the pot, you're going to shake around the contents of the pot, and the meatballs are going to pass over the treif area of the pot, and if that's the case, they can become treif. The second etza that the smak gives you, that the Torah actually does, that the Torah does present, is that you can wait for the meatballs to cool down. If you wait for the meatballs to cool down, then it's not going to be a problem. But if you wouldn't wait for the meatballs to cool down, and then you wouldn't make a hole in the pot, and you would just pour the meatballs out from this pot, so they would pass over that treif area of the pot, and if they pass over the treif area of the pot, they themselves become treif. Now the Torah says, "Ukvar nalgu olam laser kishnofelis aladofen shelo keneged erotiv." The world has been knowing to be machmer in this way. There's one more kula that the Torah mentions in terms of. Depends if the pot itself, if the tipa, the milk that's splattered on the pot is closer to the fire, closer in range of the fire, where the fire source, as opposed to if it's not in range of the fire. We're not going to discuss this heter. But there is an important heter, kula from the Rabbeinu Yechiel, that the Torah quotes, and that is for B'shas Adchak. That Rabbeinu Yechiel says that B'shas Adchak, you can be matan. So therefore, Even if the tipa shel chalav doesn't hit the area of the pot that's corresponding to where the meatballs are currently cooking, it's further up on the pot, or if it's not exactly right adjacent to the fire, whatever it is, the Rabbi Yechiel says that b'shas chak like an erev Shabbos, you can be mekel. The Darkei Moshe brings down a similar halacha. Okay, so that's in terms of the idea of Hanan applying to a pot. Now, the final discussion mentioned in the Torah, but not the final discussion that we're going to have, is what happens in the following case. What happens if I have a milchik pot? I have a milchik pot that's cooking underneath a fleishik pot. For example, I have two pots sitting in the oven, and on the lower rack in the oven, I have some milchik lasagna cooking, and on the higher, upper rack in the oven, I have some roast beef cooking. Or if I have a vent in the oven, and in the oven I have cooking some milchig food, but in the on top of the oven itself, above the area where there's a vent leading from the oven above the stovetop range, I have some meatballs cooking. What's the halacha? Do we say that the zeya from the cheese, from the milchig food cooking below, affects the fleishig pot above? So this is a tshuvas harash. In the Tshuvas HaRash, the Rash basically says that if the steam of the milk is hitting the bottom part of the fleishik pot, so then that's just like a tipa shel chalav. And if that's just like a tipa shel chalav, then that means that the tipa shel chalav, now we know that the Rash is going to pass like the Maran Rutenberg, which means that the tipa shel chalav affects a 60-part region of the pot. And so I would need 60 parts within the tafshel shabasser. I would need 60 parts of tafshel shabasser to be mevatel that region of that pot in order for the food to be kosher. If you do, then you're okay. Now, the Truman Sedashin discusses a similar case. The Ramah, by the way, he's the one who points out that the Rush is clearly passing like the Maran Rutenberg. But there's a Truman Sedashin. The Truman Sedashin says that we hang salamis of some sort over the stovetop in order to dry out. That's where we hang them over that area. So how can we do that? If we make a cheese omelet, or if we make any milk of food on top of the stove, using the stove, and there's steam that rises up from those milchak foods and hit the salami, how is that kosher? So the Truman Sedashin explains, it depends how much steam is affecting. In other words, if the steam is so hot and close enough to the food that it would be able to cause the food to reach the outside lettuce boat, then you'd have a problem. But in our case, the salamis are far enough away from the milchak food cooking, that the steam is not going to be able to affect the salami to make it reach the yatza lettuce, but therefore you're not going to have a problem. So similarly, says the Truman Sedashin, we're dealing with a milchik pot cooking beneath the fleishik pot, you're going to have to say a similar idea, that it's going to have to be, unless both pots are cooking at the same time, which the rules are a little bit different, but if you have a fleishik pot that's just sitting there and it's cold, and I have a milchik pot beneath that, that's allowing steam to travel up, milchik steam to travel up, so then, if there's enough steam to be able to cause and it's concentrated enough and it's close enough to the pot in order to be able to cause the fleishik pot to reach the outside lettuce boat, that's when you'd have a problem. Okay, that's the Truman Sedashin. Now, what happens if I have a fleishik pot that's sitting mamish on top of a milchik pot, and the milchik pot is covered? So that's where we have a point from the Isra Vayetar Arach. The Isra Vayetar Arach says that nothing is treif. Now, why should nothing be treif? And that's because I have one kli, a milchik kli, sitting, I have a fleishik kli sitting on top of a milchik kli. That is very simple, because in order for time to transfer from one kli to another, the halacha is that you need a liquid conduit, you need a liquid medium, in order for there to be a transfer of time. If I have just two pieces of metal sitting next to each other, no time can be transferred from one to the other. That's from the Isra Vayetar Arach. The Shari HaGoshai Dirkos from the Truman Sedashin, that Yesh Lahachr. Okay, now, what about if I have a tipa shel chalav that hits not the side of the pot, but hits the lid of the pot? So I have a chicken soup that's cooking, and it's covered, and now I'm pouring a bowl of cereal and milk right next to this pot of chicken soup, and some of the milk splatters and hits the top of the pot, hits the lid of the pot. What's going to be the halach in that case? So the Hagah Shari Dura says that the lid doesn't become entirely treif. The lid doesn't become treif. You're going to need 60 parts of tashel against the little bit of milk that hit it. That's from the Hagar Shari Dura. He discusses the case explicitly. He says, Tipa shenafla ala kiso shal kedera, v'shal kiso al kedera la'achar shenafla ala vatipa, afilo alche tashel mutter. The chicken soup is going to be fine. As long as you have 60 parts against the tipa shel chalav, you're going to be fine. Now, what happens, though, if instead of a little drop of milk hitting the top of my chicken soup pot, what happens if I used a milchig cover, I used a milchig lid to cover my chicken soup, then what's going to be the din? So then, of course, the lid will be trafed up entirely, and I'm going to need 60 parts against the entire. I'm going to need 60 parts against the entire lid, according to that. That's based on the Hagash Aridura. Now, one more similar case, and that is, let's say I took a hat, I was making chicken soup, and I have a lid, I cover the pot, and I take the lid off the pot while it's still piping hot, I need a place to put it down. So I put it down on top of a nearby milchig pot. What's the halach in that case? Now, the milchig pot, let's assume that it's cold. The Hagash Aridura says that in this case, both the milchig pot and the cover, the lid, the chicken soup lid, are going to be treif. But the contents, if that milchig pot has some sort of tafshel in it that's cold, that tafshel, as long as I can rest assured that no treif tam made its way into that pot, the contents of the milchig pot are going to be fine. One more case, and that's going to be the case of the candle. If I have a candle that's a wax candle, it's made out of chalev, or if I have a lamp that's made out of that contains chalev fuel, what's the halacha if I'm holding up this candle as I'm cooking, and some of the candle drips on top of the pot? Or if I have some of the lamp that some of the chalev drips out and drips onto my pot, what's going to be the din? So the Chumash HaDeshen in Simon Kuf Ayin Vav says that there's a difference between chalev mehutach and a nirshal sha'ava. If I have the wax candle, so then the wax candle is not liquid enough, not hot enough, in order to adversely affect this pot, and therefore all I'd have to do is scrape off whatever wax dripped down. But if I have the chalev mehutach, if I have the melted chalev that fell into this pot, then I'm going to have a real problem on my hands, and the kli is going to require hagala. So just to summarize the basic outline of what we've discussed, first we talked about the case of meat that fell into a boiling hot vat of milk. Then we talked about the reverse case, what happens if a tibushal chalav hits a piece of meat, one of the meatballs. We talked about the idea of dispersing tam of chalav into the rest of the pot. We talked about the idea of dispersing tam of iser into the rest of the pot. We talked about the chiddush of the Rebbeinu Ephraim to distinguish between chanan by basar v'chalav and chanan by shari iserim. Then we talked about Chanan, the various svaras of Chanan, the kinds of foods that Chanan applies to, the various svaras, the Raj with the Ravid, the Yesh Omrim and the Ran himself. We talked about Chanan in the context of Kelim, if I have some milk that splatters onto a meat pot as it's cooking. We talked about the difference between hitting the pot itself. The idea based on the Gemara in Zavachim, Daf Tzadi Vav, if you say that the tam of Chalav is Mefapeh into the rest of the pot as well. And we talked about what happens if milk hits the lid of the pot, what's going to be the din in those cases. Okay, and that's Simon Tzadi base.